My guest at this time is former California Congressman James Rogan. He is also a judge in the state of California, and he's the author of the brand new book, On to Chicago, Rediscovering Robert F. Kennedy and the Lost Campaign of 1968. He's also a columnist. You can read his columns at WND.com. And his latest piece is his reflection on the assassination 50 years ago today of then-New York Senator Robert F. Kennedy as he pursued the Democratic presidential nomination. He was assassinated just moments after declaring victory in the California Democratic primary and vowing to win the nomination at the Chicago convention. Mr. Rogan was 10 years old at the time, and those moments are seared into his memory. And, sir, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Craig. Pleasure to be with you.
Set the stage for what you experienced at that time. You were 10 years old, and you were very much already a political junkie, and you were excited that he won when it was a very close race in the early morning hours, but you didn't know until the next day that the tragedy had befallen him.
That's correct, although I must tell you, I wasn't excited that Bobby Kennedy won. I thought it was tragic that he won, and the only reason was... In my fifth grade class, we were in California, by the way, and so we had been studying the presidential election, and here the California primary right here in our backyard, which was going to be this make-or-break primary. On the Democratic side, it was between Bobby Kennedy and Senator Eugene McCarthy. Most of the kids in my class were for Kennedy. I was for McCarthy, only because the cute girl in my class was from McCarthy. And so, I was pulling for McCarthy for a very selfish reason. And so I just knew that Cheryl would need comforting the next day when I saw that Bobby Kennedy had pulled out this victory. And I stayed up late. I mean, here I was fifth grade, and it was after midnight. My mom let me stay up late on a school night to watch these returns. And I was already a political junkie. I turned off the TV right after Kennedy had finished his election speech. And the next morning, I got up early for school, and one of my classmates called me, Mike Dittman, and he said, "Did you hear what happened with Kennedy?" And I thought he was calling to rub in the fact that Kennedy won, because he was a big Kennedy kid in the class. And when he told me what had happened, I turned on the TV, which was it was a novelty in 1968. We had our first color television. It was a little portable color TV. I turned it on, and the first thing I saw was color footage from 6 hours earlier of Kennedy flat on his back on this concrete floor of a pantry of a hotel in Los Angeles with this big pool of maroon blood seeping from the back of his head. I had never seen anything like that before. It was just stunning to a 10-year-old boy. The next morning in class, that morning in class, we were all in there, and our teacher was trying to explain to us and put some perspective and sanity in this. And as she was doing it, all these Bobby Kennedy posters that had been decorating the class from a day or two before were looking down on us. It was just this haunting tableau that I've never been able to forget. It's hard to believe it was 50 years ago today.
It is, and that also happened just 2 months after Dr. King had been assassinated in Memphis, and that, of course, led to a lot of unrest around the country in a variety of cities. We certainly saw it at the Chicago Convention a short time later for the Democratic National Convention. And so as a 10-year-old boy, and I think even for people quite a bit older than that, certainly for young adults at that time who had flocked to the Kennedy campaign, and even those who had been fond of his brother, the late President JFK, this was kind of a searing moment that in some ways, I don't know if it defined your generation, but it deeply affected your generation. Explain how.
It deeply did, and what amazes me is here I am, I'm 60 years old, I'm almost 61 now, and I'm a judge, and I get all these young lawyers in my courtroom, district attorneys and public defenders, who are in their 30s, and I when I was writing the book, I talk about my project, about Bobby Kennedy, and I would just get these blank looks. I mean, we have generations of young professionals today who've never heard of Robert F. Kennedy or Nelson Rockefeller or Eugene McCarthy or Hubert Humphrey or people who were titans politically on the stage in 1968. So for those, I'm part of a dwindling generation of people who actually remember 1968, and to go from the anti-war movement to the assassination of Dr. King to the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy to the Tet Offensive, where America turned against the Vietnam War, to riots in the streets, We had over 100 cities in flames after Dr. King's assassination. People in 1968 really believed that a possible revolution was afoot. And so the conservatives running that year, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, even Alabama Governor George Wallace, were talking about escalating the war and bringing victory, not negotiating peace, putting more cops on the streets to protect citizens. It was an election like no other, and for those anybody who lived through the late 1960s, especially 1968, it's almost one of these things where you have to be there to really understand it intellectually. But it was certainly a time for as a 10-year-old boy that I was absorbing all of this. It was sort of my introduction to American politics and history up close, and it had a profound impact on everybody who lived during those days.
How do you think that particular event and just the unrest of that entire year still drives our politics today?
It's I wish we had more time to explore that, because as I was researching my book on the 1968 campaign, it really struck me while I was writing it how 1968 and 2016. There were so many different parallels. I mean, a nation divided, the polarization of politics, the abject hatred that people had for the other side, the incendiary campaign strategies of some candidates. I was finishing the book. I was writing the book and finishing it during the 2016 campaign, and I just kept seeing all of these parallels. For example, Bernie Sanders, who is sort of viewed today as the modern leader of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. I would beg to differ with that. I think the campaigns of Eugene McCarthy and Bobby Kennedy in 1968 were really the midwives of what we now see today as the progressive movement. And if you go back and study their speeches and their campaigns and what their issues were, you can see it is a direct predecessor to what the progressives of today are talking about. And so anybody who wants to understand 2016 and 2018 needs to understand 1968 if you want to know where it all started and how the connection reaches back in time.
Jim, you mentioned you were supporting McCarthy for perhaps less than ideological reasons back when you were 10 years old. Were you later a Democrat who eventually became a Republican and a conservative, or was?
Yes, okay. I was. And but you have to understand, I was born and raised in downtown San Francisco. I was a fourth generation San Franciscan raised by a grandfather who was a union guy who was a dock worker for 45 years. If there was a Republican Party in San Francisco, I never saw it. Some things never change. That's probably true, just as true today as it was back in the 1960s. I started off in politics as a young idealistic Democrat. I later changed parties. Ronald Reagan was the reason I changed parties. That was back in the 1980s. And I later served in our state legislature here in California and then in Congress as a conservative Republican. And if you're old enough, those of you who are listening to remember, you might recall I was one of the lead prosecutors in the Bill Clinton impeachment trial.
Absolutely.
After that, I found people who always gave me a sort of a raised eyebrow about having once been a Democrat. They cut me a lot of slack after that.
So what do you want folks to have the main takeaway from Bobby Kennedy? Was it the aspirational themes that can certainly be embraced by conservatives and conservative ideas, while obviously not necessarily embracing the specific policies that Kennedy had? Or is it something else that you think is the legacy of this?
The legacy really is not just Bobby Kennedy. It's the people who ran in 1968. I got the idea for the book watching the very first Republican debate of the 2016 campaign. You may remember, I think it was August 2015. Mm-hmm. They had 17 people running for the Republican presidential nomination. And other than Jeb Bush, who was a president's son and brother, And Donald Trump, who is a famous reality TV star, billionaire real estate developer, most of these other guys, I knew who they were because I'm a political junkie and I served with some of them. But for the average American, they were somewhere between 0 and 2% name recognition in the public opinion polls. And as I was watching this debate with all these, and I don't want to say this in a negative way when I say nobodies, because they were all, you know, they were all accomplished and so forth. But just from a public recognition perspective, nobody knew who they were. And I started thinking about 1968. And in that one campaign, most people either don't remember or don't know that running against each other in one single race, you had President Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, three-term governor of New York, Nelson Rockefeller, Bobby Kennedy, Vice President Hubert Humphrey, Eugene McCarthy, George Wallace, who made Donald Trump look like a shrinking violet on the campaign trail, and Governor George Romney from Michigan, who was Mitt's dad. And ironically, the one man John F. Kennedy said he was afraid to run against in 1964. He didn't mind running against Nixon or anybody else, but Romney scared him. And so you had these nine political titans, most of whom had been on the political stage for at least 20 years. Their fingerprints had been all over every major policy decision from the 1940s to the 1960s, and they were all in one race. And it was the ultimate throwdown in American politics. And as I watched that debate, I remembered I started thinking about 1968 and these candidates, what elections used to look like. And then I remembered reading that Bobby Kennedy's neurosurgeon, who 50 years ago today was fighting to save his life, said the shot that killed him was a fluke. If it had just hit him 1 centimeter to the right, he would have walked out of the hospital in a week or two and resumed his campaign. And that was the impetus for my new book, On to Chicago. I wanted to explore, not based on sentimentality or, you know, that Camelot sentimental nonsense. I wanted to explore the issue on the facts and the evidence. What really would have happened if Bobby Kennedy had survived and continued his campaign? What would have happened to the Democratic Party? What would have happened to the Republican ticket? And what would have really happened in November 1968? And I started the book 3 years ago. I thought it might be interesting to have it come out the same year that it was the 50th anniversary. And here it is. Today's the formal release date, right on the 50th anniversary of his shooting. And so it's based on history. It's technically, it's historical fiction because it has him survive. But it's I invented, Greg, a new genre of writing. No one's ever done historical fiction with an additional 400 pages of cited sourced endnotes to show that what you think is fiction either really happened or is based on what happened. The notes are so long they couldn't put them in the book. It would have taken a second volume. WND had to create a separate dedicated website to throw up 1,000 endnotes on it. So. Yeah, it was a great experience writing the book, and I hope people who read it are enjoying it.
Fascinating. Fascinating topic, and I think folks will enjoy it. On to Chicago, Rediscovering Robert F. Kennedy and the Lost Campaign of 1968. Congressman Jim Rogan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Former California Congressman James Rogan, as you heard, he's now a judge out in the state of California. Once again, the book On to Chicago, published by WND. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.